south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, got some seminar news for you. Finally, we've homed in on the dates for our Spring 2023 Expat Insider Seminar. Looks like it's going to be from Friday, March 17th through Friday, March 24th. In other words, as usual, it's a week long. Now, don't search out your flights just yet, because it'll take me to the end of the week to finalize our hotels and make sure those dates are exactly correct. So, for all you guys and gals who are on the early bird sign-up list, you can expect an email and more info coming at you with the final details in the next couple days. By the way, if you want to get in on the early bird discounts and get on that list, remember, if you sign up under the early bird discount plan, you save $500 off the regular price. To get on that list, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Oh, and once again, it'll be a week long. We'll be spending some time in Guatemala and El Salvador. So anyway, just hang in there. It's all coming together in March. Oh, and here's a related seminar question from one of our loyal listeners, Dave. I think it's Dave number 23. He says, Johnny, I've never been to one of your seminars, but I know you give them every so often, and I hear repeatedly how popular they are. However, I'm curious as to why they're so expensive. You're not targeting the rich Democrat gringos, are you? Then he signs it, respectfully, Dave, the number one enemy of progressive Democrats and sold-out, pussy-whipped Republicans. Dave, talk like that'll get you canceled. You probably are already. Hell, if I was on antisocial media, I probably wouldn't last 2 seconds either. All right, Dave, you know, that's a legit question. Namely, why are my seminars expensive? Of course, the word expensive, like beauty, is in the eye of the beholder, right? It depends almost exclusively on your own financial circumstances. Let's face it, if you take a flight anywhere, it could be, let's say, $400, coach, and first class, $2,000 or even $3,000, who knows, from, let's say, Chicago to New York. Is that extra couple of grand worth it just to get those 2 or 3 extra hours just to get free drinks on the plane and a dinner menu? And, of course, that all-important extra legroom. Well, for some people, it's too ridiculous to contemplate going first class. But for others, totally worth it. In fact, I remember one of my previous seminar attendees telling me that he once paid $5,000 for a one-hour phone call with some kind of finance guru. And when he told me the guy's name, I didn't recognize it. I didn't know who he was, but apparently, this attendee told me it was the best $5,000 he ever spent. So, as to what's cheap and what's expensive, it's so relative, it's all over the place. Though, as far as my seminar goes, to some it might sound expensive, but remember, you've got 7 hotel nights included, and you have to remember I've got a staff who do a month's scouting ahead of time. That doesn't come cheap, but it's really the intangibles that make it so worthwhile. In fact, I've heard so many attendees tell me that by taking the seminar, we save 10 to 20 grand in just mistake avoidance. Not by learning what to do, but by learning what not to do once they get down here to Latin America. Because when you come down as a novice, you just don't know any better. Remember, to the locals, you're that rich gringo coming down, and you're the guy that doesn't know the language or the customs, and you don't have many real friends or a trusted network. And of course, that means to certain people, to certain Latino and gringo sharks, you're the low-hanging fruit just ripe for picking. In fact, in my many discussions with gringos and expats who've come down without ever even knowing about my seminar, I like to ask them a particular question about money. That is, the gringos and expats who've been down at least 2 years. I ask them, how much dough have they lost somehow or have been weaseled or scammed out of, or even somehow squandered? Whether in a failed business deal with a local or even a gringo, in a rental or car or land purchase, a partner that gouged you, even a professional like a lawyer, or other seemingly legit business guy that took you for a ride. Well, would you be surprised if I told you most gringos after a couple of years get ripped for at least 10 grand? And if not outright ripped off, at least gouged to death for sums that high even more. Well, my response is if you're the kind of guy that tries to do everything himself, you think you know a lot. You're astute because you had a pretty successful business up north. Well, I've met a lot of gringos, newbie gringos, stubborn gringos like that, who are used to doing things their own way. They plow right ahead. Soon enough, they realize living, working, or doing business down here is not like it is up in the States. I know it sounds harsh, but I always say, if you're nicked or even nickeled and dimed to death for 5 or 10 grand in the early days, you're getting off easy. Consider it part of the Living in Latin America learning curve. And that's what my seminar is all about, getting you over that hump painlessly. And you know, after being down here so many years myself, over 30, I've seen and heard of almost every way a gringo or expat could get bamboozled down here. So a great part of my seminar concerns teaching and showing you what not to do, how to avoid those traps, how to hook up with the right people and networks. In fact, attendees keep telling me over and over again that the legal part of the seminar alone, which is only one day out of the week, was worth more than the price of the entire seminar. Just that one day with our seminar lawyer. And then there's that incalculable value in hooking up with my own expat network. You see, there's always a previous little group of expat seminar attendees that are now living down here who will be hanging with us at this seminar too. There's nothing like sitting down with a bunch of expats, hearing their stories from the horse's mouth. Oh, and one last thing. You know, at every single one of my seminars, except the very first one, and this one in March will be seminar number 19. Turns out, every seminar since the very first one, I've had multiple repeat offenders. In fact, some have done the seminar 2, even 3 times. Now, if you think about that for a second, that should eliminate any doubts as to the value and quality of the seminar. That's also why so many attendees tell me it's like drinking from a fire hose. Just non-stop info and boots-on-the-ground experiences. Oh, and get this. This will be the 19th seminar. So many, many dozens of people have attended already. And of course, I offer a money-back guarantee. And guess what? No one's ever asked for a refund. And we're talking about hundreds of people who've attended my seminars in the past 11 or 12 years. And judging by all the repeat offenders, I could easily stretch the seminar out to 2, even 3 weeks. But as it turns out, 1 jam-packed week's about all most people can take. Even after 1 week, we've got information overload. So anyway, to get on the early bird waiting list, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. All right, let's start out today with something light. Kelly from Minnesota says, and I think Kelly's a girl. She says, "Hi, Johnny, I'm sort of halfway along the line on my plan B. I'm planning to move to Panama. I visited 3 times already. My question, thought, or observation for you is, when I'm in Panama, I'm always in the gringo areas. I don't speak Spanish yet, so I always seem to be hanging with a few gringos and expats who can. The problem is, Johnny, whenever we have to tip at a restaurant or whatever, it never fails. There's always a gringo or two who are very bad tippers, skinflints or holdouts. It can be embarrassing, especially if the waiter or waitress is pretty good. Sometimes I overtip just to compensate for the cheapskates in the crowd. Then again, I've noticed that Latinos don't tip well either, even wealthy Latinos. So, Johnny, what's your experience with that and how should I handle it?" Signed, Kelly from Lansing, Michigan, soon to be permanently in Panama. Well, Kelly, you must never forget one thing. Few cultures and countries in the world love us gringos for what we are, though they do love our money. Lucky for us, though, Latin Americans genuinely like gringos, especially Latin Americans living off the gringo tourist trail, because they rarely get to see us in person. And because there are so few of us off the gringo tourist trail, we don't try to terraform their culture. Unfortunately, though, being that Panama is more and more on the gringo tourist trail, I've noticed our gringo advantage is slipping. Now, as far as the tipping problem when you're with a group of people, I've been there before too, and you're right, it can be embarrassing. Now, as for me, even though I've been living in Latin America for the past 30 years or so, I've been around the world, and it seems the same everywhere. The worst tippers are always backpackers, teachers, Germans, and Muslims. Ask any restaurant owner or bellhop anywhere in the world, and you'll hear the same thing. So here's my approach to tipping. If I truly get bad service, I don't tip, though sometimes you're forced to because it's included in the bill already. Of course, if you make a stink and call the manager, you can get him to eliminate that from the bill. But since it's so rarely done, it'll cause a scene and it's not worth it, believe me. Just know that in most of Latin America, especially in the big cities, when you get your bill called a factura down here, you'll notice a thing called IVA, I-V-A, added to the bill. That's your value-added tax. Could be 10 up to 20%, depending what Latin country you're in. Most times, too, when you get a printed receipt, they'll have something on it called a propina. That's a tip. And in almost all cases, you'll see 10% automatically added. Now, I don't like that. I don't think anyone does, because adding an automatic 10% tip, no matter how the waiter or waitress is, that seems unfair. Though I understand why it's done, because so many people, especially in Latin America, are such bad tippers, waiters and waitresses would just get stiffed all the time. Now, when I see that the propina's been added, When I get just mediocre or average service, I don't add anything additional because they get their 10% anyway. It's been automatically added in. But if I get really good service, that extra little star, I'll add maybe another 10%. However, like you, Kelly, if I'm with a couple of cheapskates, and man, Kelly, you're so right. I've got teachers in my family, and they truly are horrible tippers. Well, then what to do? As for me, I always say when we first sit down, separate checks, please. Then the waiter or waitress will know immediately who those shit tippers are, and you won't be lumped in that group. Funny thing, too, and it seems to be universal. If you're in a little group and it's all on one check, someone will always short the waiter on the tip. Why is that? Speaking of tips, you know, here in Latin America, there's a certain kind of protocol they have that does not exist up by you. You see, many big grocery stores and supermarkets, including certain Walmarts and Costcos, there'll be a guy bagging your stuff at the cashier, and he'll push your cart out to your car for you. You'll open your trunk or whatever, he'll load your stuff into your car, and he'll expect a little tip. Usually, the change, the coins left over from your purchase. That's the customary tip for these guys. If you don't give him some change, he won't say a thing. He won't get mad, he won't give you a look. He's used to the fact that maybe only half the people will tip. By the way, in all my years down here, I found the baggers are always men or teenage boys. Somehow, down here in Latin America, there are a slew of gender-assigned jobs. Just two more reasons why Latin America is not feminist or wokester-friendly. Boo-hoo, huh? By the way, as far as these baggers who take your stuff out to the car, something else I've discovered. A lot of these guys don't make a salary at all. Not minimum wage, not near it. They're off the books. And it's worth it to them because they make more than minimum wage just taking tips, you know, change, by bagging products, loading the cart, and bringing them out to the car. Figure it out. If minimum wage is, let's say, 15 bucks a day, he bags, let's say, for 100 people on an 8-hour shift, and he gets a 50-cent tip from half of them, that means he made 25 bucks that day. Meanwhile, the cashier he's working with only makes 15 bucks a day, minimum wage. And believe me, those grocery stores are glad to have the extra free help. Though I'm sure they vet those guys out at least a little bit. After all, they're dressed up in a company shirt or apron or logo on the hat. Anyway, just so you know, next time you're at Costco or Walmart down here and a guy brings your groceries out to the car, you just might want to tip him. Now, of course, in the low-end neighborhoods and barrios, yep, they've got big supermarkets there too, but they're a lot more dirty and scruffy. So with most supermarkets in the barrios, you won't see many baggers around. You'll have to do it yourself because poor folks don't tip. They would if they could, but when you're poor, you're living on the edge. All right, here's a short email from Carl. He says, Johnny, are you by chance retired? At first I thought he said retarded. Then I looked closer and it was retired. Love the show. Been listening for 3 years. Signed, Carl from Louisiana. Carl, that's one of the shortest emails ever. You ask if I'm retired. You know, in Spanish, the word is jubilado. Root word being jubilant or jubilation. That's J-U-B-I-L-A, etc., etc. That's jubilado. And why wouldn't you be jubilant if you were done working a boring lifetime 9-to-5? Retirement. Well, I've heard about retirement, but I don't like the sound of it. You know, when I was growing up, I heard that R word all the time. Every time my dad and his buddies would get together, there'd be someone or two or three of his friends doing the countdown. You know, how many years left for retirement? Oh, and another thing they were big on talking about was when the mortgage would get paid off. They all knew how many years and days left for retirement, and that year and month they could have a mortgage burning party. You know, although they talked about it a lot, I never actually saw anyone burn their mortgage. Did you? Though I do remember my dad and his buddies talk about what they would do with all that extra time once they retired. Number one on that list was sleep till 10 every day. Though the reality was most of my dad's buddies worked in a factory and they got up at 5 without alarm clocks. It was automatic. And when they retired, it was no different. They automatically got up at 5 once again. And most of them didn't have hobbies, so they drove their wives nuts hanging around the house all day. By the way, my dad never made it to retirement. He died at 54 on the operating table. Don't think I ever told this story, but if I did, you can blame Alzheimer's. Anyway, my dad was always a super physically fit sportsman type. Once he hit around 40 years old, he just wasn't active in sports anymore, had a lot of injuries, and the muscle, you know, turns to flab. Now, he continued to coach a lot of kids' baseball, basketball, and football teams, but he wasn't active anymore, was on yo-yo diets all the time, too. So anyway, when he hit around 54 years old, he wasn't feeling very good, kind of sluggish, lethargic. He had a complete physical, and they told him his coronary arteries were quite blocked. But not to worry, they didn't have to operate. They have this brand new procedure called balloon angioplasty, where they cut a slit in your femoral artery in your leg, and they run a catheter up to the coronary arteries in your heart and expand them with little balloons. Widen them a bit so you get more blood flow. It was quite a new thing. That was back in 1984. So we took him to the hospital. They promised he'd be out in the afternoon, an outpatient procedure. Well, he never got off the operating table. They punctured one of his arteries with the catheter, and he bled out there. Apparently those catheters, way back when they first started doing that procedure, were pretty stiff. Not like the super flexible ones today, so pliable you can tie them in multiple knots. Anyway, that day in 1984, my dad had really, really, really bad luck. Oh, I'm looking at Carl's email. He's got a PS on it. He says, "Johnny, do you really like podcasting or being on the radio? My kid wants to be a podcaster for a living." He says, "My kid's 15 years old and I hear him in the bedroom recording himself making a podcast." So he says, I knocked on the door, went in and asked him, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Leave me alone, Dad. I'm doing a podcast. I'm trying to build my brand." Carl says, "He caught me off guard. I was shocked. When I was 15, I barely knew how to wipe my butt, much less build a brand." Yeah, right, Carl. I get it, all right. We're living in a completely different world. But as to your question, do I like podcasting or doing radio? Well, not really. I don't wake up in the morning excited to do a podcast. I'm definitely not thinking about building my brand, whatever that is, though. It can be fun and challenging. In a way, it's something to look forward to in a screwed up world just filled with fake news and manipulated news cycles. Oh, and I'd like to sleep till 10, but my internal clock always seems to kick in at about 7. How about yours? All right, now in an unrelated piece of news. You heard me on a recent previous show mention that in El Salvador, you know, which was once the most dangerous country in all Latin America, but is now the safest. So then why do we keep seeing in news reports that it's the most dangerous? Fake news again. Since President Bukele has been in office, violent crime has dropped 95%. And he's put pretty much all the gang members in jail. That's 50,000 gangbangers. And you've heard the whining media say that they're abusing human rights in Salvador by throwing them in the clink that way. Yeah, right. What about the human rights that have been violated for years of those 6 million regular citizens who feared walking down the street even during the daytime? And now they're rejoicing because they can finally go outside again. Anyway, Bukele's crackdown on gang members has so affected even the leaders of those gangs, they're leaving the country and escaping to neighborhood Latin countries, like, for example, Guatemala. Just lately, Guatemala's been capturing Salvadorian gang leaders that have escaped there to get away from Bukele. For example, just 2 weeks ago, a guy named Eduardo Perez, alias Scooby, a guy responsible for ordering a wave of violence on March 26 that resulted in 62 killings in El Salvador, well, fearing he'd be caught and imprisoned, he left the country. The cops caught up with him in Guatemala and are extraditing him right now. We've got a recent quote here from Salvadorian Security Minister Gustavo Villatoro. He says, quote, "The top gang leaders believed they were untouchable. Now they've turned cowardly and are trying to escape to neighboring countries. They won't evade the long arm of the Salvadorian state. They can run and hide, but we'll get them too." By the way, Guatemalan authorities found this guy, Perez, holed up in a hospital. Oh, and you might wonder, how can you tell if a guy's a gang member or not? By the tattoos, dummy. What else? Every particular gang marks its members with a particular tattoo slogan, along with the other usual suspect inked icons, namely Jesus, Mary, a few misspelled Bible verses, and Mama. By the way, did you know that the narcos in Mexico have their own Catholic patron saint? Saint Malberta. Go ahead, look it up. That's in case you have any doubt as to who's really running things there. And as for all those woke, whining human rights activists crying about all those gang members being thrown into the clink in El Salvador, who, by the way, are almost always fronted and supported by first world activists and really corrupt NGOs. NGOs, of course, meaning non-governmental organizations. They get permission to work in any particular country with tax-free status, ostensibly to help the poor people there. But what they're really good at doing is importing the woke principles of the first world and socialism to third world countries. By the way, I've told you this before. The big wigs and the board of directors of those NGOs hop around from convention to convention, staying in Hiltons and drinking champagne, all the while having meetings, shaking hands with, and having photo ops with corrupt politicians. It's an ass-kisser's paradise. I've seen these guys. I know how they are. Corrupt to the core. By the way, occasionally in my travels, I run into these guys face to face. And here's what I say to all of them when they tell me about their great NGOs and how they've built X number of solar outhouses for Jesus. And nowadays, since President Bukele of El Salvador has been conquering the gang problem, their latest media complaint is how he's abusing the human and civil rights of the gangbangers and their families. Well, just recently, I ran into a couple of these woke NGO guys. And I said, why don't you just shut up? You are part of the problem. Why don't you go back to the States and fix your own country's gang problems before you whine about how other people are at least trying to do something about it? But that'll never happen. They need a cause for governments and people to donate money to. Oh, and speaking of charities and donating money, you longtime listeners know how I feel about giving money to corrupt organized charities. But you know, you'll find down here, just like in the States, when you're in a Costco or Walmart, as you're checking out or going through the checkout line, you'll see a little canister or two, partially filled with coins and low-denomination funny money bills. Local charities make it a habit of putting those collection cans at the checkout. And when you check out, the cashier is prompted to ask you to donate, too. It's happened to me 100 times. It'll happen to you, too. Now, if you're so naive as to think that all, or most of it, goes to that charity, then you deserve that fake feel-good feeling you're going to get when you donate. The thing is, though, there's that guilt factor, because often the lady or guy in front of you will donate, stick some money in that little box, kind of put you on the spot. And if it's a store you go back to once in a while, you can only use that old line, I already gave last week or whatever, so many times before you start getting funny looks. Anyway, you don't want to get into a big discussion about charities in the checkout line. Besides, you're the wealthy gringo, right? And if you don't donate, you're a jerk. Or maybe not. Well, here's a little trick that works almost all the time, and it lets you get out of it sort of gracefully. You say to the girl or guy, I'll match you. You put in a buck or whatever funny money and I'll match you. A buck to them is worth a hell of a lot more than a buck is to you. So they'll almost always back down gracefully. By the way, about a month ago, I was in line with another gringo expat friend of mine, a recently arrived guy. And man, he pulled such a slick move, it's worth mentioning. Turns out there was a rather cute girl at the checkout counter at Costco, called Price Mart down here. And she, right on cue as we were checking out, said to him, how about donating a buck or some change to so-and-so Save the Genital Wart Foundation or whatever? So then what do you think my gringo buddy answered? He said, I'll tell you what, I'll put in $2, one for me and one for you, if you give me your phone number. You and I are destined to have a cup of coffee, he said. Of course, that would be her WhatsApp number because nobody uses real phone numbers anymore. Well, guess what? She smiled and gave it to him without a moment's hesitation. That's the power of the gringo advantage. By the way, she spoke very little English and he spoke little Spanish, but he was able to get his point across. I helped a bit. I translated. Meanwhile, I noticed the old guy who was next in line, who saw the whole thing, holding a big thumbs up. Oh, and get this. A few moments later, when we got back to the car, I said, hey, Joey, what would you have done if she'd have turned you down, if she would have refused to give you her number? He said, I had a comeback for that. I would have said, too bad. I guess another poor kid goes hungry tonight. Explaining it that way, he said, she might have caved. All right, on a different note, you remember in a previous show I mentioned how in Latin America, they do on occasion go after corrupt politicians and even hand out very stiff sentences. But what most people don't know, and they don't publicize this much at all, depending on a person's age and connections, a guy or gal could spend his entire jail sentence in a luxury villa. Because, you know, most of these guys have stolen so much money and have accumulated so much real estate. When they're confined to house arrest, it's not much of a punishment at all. In fact, many times, house arrest means being confined to something like an all-inclusive luxury beach resort. Well, I'm here to report it happened again just this week. Sergio Cabral, the former governor of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, who was sentenced to 420 years in prison in the largest corruption case in the history of Brazil. Well, he just got remanded to house arrest after serving 6 years in a country club prison. And he'll be spending the next 414 years under house arrest in one of his own luxury estates, of which, by the way, he has many. Oh, and it says in this article, in the last 6 years when he was behind bars, other prisoners accused him of having various cell phones, a 65-inch TV, and a home theater system installed in his cell, as well as ordering out food every day from luxury restaurants. But now, it's house arrest. The question is, how long will that ankle bracelet hold up in the jacuzzi? All right, now an email from John in New Jersey. He says, Johnny, longtime listener John here. As if I needed another reason to get the hell out of Dodge, my 11-year-old grandkid came home from school today and said very seriously, Grandpa, I'm worried. There are too many people on Earth and we need a purge like the movie. Johnny, you think he got that idea from the teachers at school? Duh. That's why it's imperative that more kids be homeschooled. They need to be disconnected from that woke madness. Now a little bit about me, Johnny. I'm 67 and I clearly remember being taught in elementary school about the coming new ice age, which was going to destroy all life. Then, after a few years, that died down, and it was all about the destruction of the ozone layer. Then they banned Freon and fluorocarbons. That died down. And then it was all about the killer bees coming up from Africa. Stung a few people, some died, I guess. Then after a few years, suddenly only 12 pairs of American eagles left in the whole world. And the polar bears were dying out too. Not to mention, we were being invaded and engulfed by kudzu. Remember that plant that was supposed to ravage the northern hemisphere? Well, that faded away in a few years, and then we were running out of water. Then it was peak oil. The oceans and lakes and rivers being polluted by massive doses of acid rain. Then it was, don't eat fish, they're loaded with cadmium and mercury. And in the background, there were always clouds of nuclear disasters on top of all that. And even mother's milk was contaminated with PCBs and DDT. But now that I'm more or less in my old age, I peel back the layers of all of it and see the entire thing hinges on the media's ability to instill guilt and a feeling of humans' responsibility for all the bad things that happen on Earth. Well, Johnny, I'm 67 and I've stopped feeling guilty for any of it. But even heavier layers of guilt are being passed on to my grandkid. I'm not saying, Johnny, that my generation didn't cause some damage. Remember, give a hoot, don't pollute? Smokers never disposed of their butts. They just tossed them out the car window or ground them into the sidewalk with their heels. Like George Carlin said, the planet is fine. It's the people who are f***ed. Anyway, Johnny, I'll be signing up for your next seminar. Can my 11-year-old grandson come at half fare? I want him to have the opportunity to see how normal people live. Signed, John. All right, John. Now, about your grandson. He can come if he's not a snowflake. There'll be no participation trophies, you know.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.